Welcome to Future Bytes. I am Gabriele Corcos. We are on stage 17 at the Cumulus Media Studios on Penn Plaza. The stage is sponsored by Hackensack Meridian Health. Today, the conversation is incredibly exciting. I have two wonderful innovators and thinkers, those kind of brains that are, you know, bound to change the world. And that's why I'm really starstruck, because I hope by osmosis to absorb. I'm here for a private class. Let's put it that way. So I am here with Charlie Fink and Randy Zuckerberg. Because mommy raised me well, I always start with the ladies. But, you know, I'll give you all the love that I can possibly give you. So Randy is the creator and the CEO of SUSE Tech Kitchen. SUSE, we'll ask you who SUSE is, but basically it is what you would envision. Like, you remember when you watched Back to the Future and Mama was hydrating the pizza for Michael J. Fox? She basically went, you know, now it's, what, 30 years later? And she's now finding those appliances, those gadgets, those innovators, those thinkers, and brought everything into a kitchen. And she's traveling the U.S. showing mainly kids, if I'm not mistaken, trying to get them younger, but showing the world the change that is about to happen.
Exactly, like a real-life Willy Wonka chocolate factory for families.
That is absolutely crazy. Okay, and then Charlie. Charlie's a VR, AR consultant, speaker, columnist for Forbes, an authentic visionary. And he's here to tell us the stories of imagination. I really would like you to pour the things that you have learned in these past few years and really depict what the change can be. As I was telling you in the green room, imagine you're going to have another kid tomorrow.
Yeah.
What is his kitchen going to be in 10 or 20 years from now? A little premise, okay, about this episode. I am a total analog utensil. Like, I believe in the dirt. I believe in being connected to the ground. I grew up in a farm, so my food experience, my connection with the kitchen comes from grandmother's stories, the fireplace crackling, microwave that never got into my house until I moved to the US. So I was like 30 when I got my first microwave. Now I am embracing the change, not because I want to redesign my kitchen, but because I do see an opportunity to change the world by bringing the kitchen to the same pace of the times are changing. So making sure that the technology that we have help us pollute less, save a little bit more food, cook better, speak better on behalf of certain technology, certain things that are just happening by default. We cannot hide from them. I can keep on bragging that I want a fireplace in my kitchen. I live in Brooklyn. It's never going to happen. You know what I mean? If I do that, I have to move back to the farm. But there are things that are happening in the kitchen and in terms of content that are incredibly exciting.
Although I think you do raise a good point, which is that sometimes we get so excited about technology that it actually takes us away from the people we love and the things we love. So I think we need to make sure as we're moving forward with innovation that we don't lose
that
kind of personal. Personal touch.
So, yeah. Tell me how it all started and why. Like what brought you there, and then who is Sue?
All right. Well, Sue, I purposely wanted to use a girl's name on the marquee of our experience because almost anything that you see that has to do with food and creativity, whether it's Willy Wonka, Chuck E. Cheese, you name it, has a boy's name. And I think that does something to the psyche of young girls when it says, you know, all areas of food and innovation are run by boys. So,
me,
that was very important. When you enter the space, it's not girly.
Right.
It's, you know, for everyone, it's non-gendered space. And, when you go into Sue's Tech Kitchen, you get to engage with all the latest technology and get snacks. So we have robots that make you pancakes. We have 3D printed chocolate that make. You know, it's pretty wild, but what it does is it enables us to open up a conversation with a child or a family about technology, especially in communities where they might not be learning about it in school.
Yeah, that is to me one of the most important things that I try to. This is not about even teaching. This is really about having a conversation with your kids or with the people around you. I find that knowledge has to be provoked by curiosity. It cannot be dogmatic. It cannot just be pushed down your throat. And that's actually, I'll jump straight to him like really, really quick, just because you live in a world that is loaded with curiosity. One of the things that we always discuss and I hear you often say in your speaking engagements or even in your book, is that eventually, and it's happening already, the world will be painted with data. Everything around you will be telling a story.
Yes. And that's actually the title of my second book. The world will be painted with data. Yes. How augmented reality changes everything. Oh. I will say this at the beginning of our conversation. Augmented reality is kind of a funny word, and I don't think it's a word that people ultimately will use. I think we use it inside the industry, and columnists and people who are thought leaders are using it as a way to describe this technology. But really what's going to happen is it's going to seep into technology. At the moment, it's expressed through mobile AR,
right.
through the camera on your mobile phone, grabbing that data and combining it with the physical world. So that's, the augmented reality we have today. The augmented reality we'll have tomorrow will have to do with head-mounted displays and AR glasses, but those won't be called AR glasses. They'll be called eyeglass or something like that. So, people won't be walking around saying, oh, these are my augmented or AR glasses. it's going to be thought of as a brand.
It will come as a smartphone. But right now, just a device.
Exactly. But right now, mobile augmented reality is hot, of course, because of the introduction of plane detection technology, by Android and Apple. This means that the objects that are gathered, like in Pokemon Go, can be better anchored into our physical world and create a more complete illusion.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, if I could mount a scanner projector under my small New York Brooklyn cabinet that recognizes the ingredient that I had in front of me, that is able to say, oh, you have a box of spaghetti here. Would you like to see a recipe? Like that kind of, not necessarily plug and play, but coexistence of
you're,
content that is
what you're talking about is object recognition, which is something that self-driving cars need to do.
Yeah.
So that's a technology that is going to seep into a lot of the technology we use. People often talk about the importance of facial recognition to computer vision and how that might be integrated into augmented reality, because augmented reality, not to put too fine a point on it, but we're talking about the augmentation of man and of people, which I would argue started with the smartphone, right? That makes us smarter. That makes us better. It gives us access to the world's information in real time, which is something that no man has ever had in history. So, and of course for me, I never have a senior moment because I can always remember the name of that actor or the name of that restaurant because I've got a smartphone that makes me smarter.
It comes really to applying technology, not just to what is a wow factor, but really what can really impact your life and how change the world for the better. Do you see in Sue's Kitchen, are you right now working exclusively with appliances, or are you also experimenting with immersive realities?
We're working with all facets of STEM. So we have some things that are just straight up chemistry science experiments, we take cereal, we pour liquid nitrogen over it, you eat it, you breathe smoke out your nose, and then we talk about why that happens, and it makes for the best Instagram photo ever. So there are some things that are just straight up chemistry. We do mathematics. We actually, right now, we're touring 6 different cities in the U.S. this summer, and we're experimenting with how to teach children the basic building blocks of blockchain and cryptocurrency using a platter of cookies, and everyone competes to do math problems and sees, what
share. So the incredible brain exercise that I have to do to think of blockchain is becoming now a given for this new generation.
By the
time they're in high school, they're like, yeah, sure.
That's right. So some of it is straight up robotics. We do have VR and AR, and some of it is, designed to get you to look in the eyes of another human being and solve a problem together, because I think that is the only issue that I see. When we created Sue's Tech Kitchen, I did not want to make an experience where a family walks in, everyone separates, and then isolates themselves into technology. For me, I think that food and dining and these experiences can bring people closer together.
To me, this is what the most exciting thing, because I have found the technology alienating. My kids are growing up with tablets, and they just get lost.
That's
the kitchen is still that single, probably only left place in the house where we get together and those devices are dropped. But
so
at the
for
same
15
time,
minutes, your kids have to put their phones down.
But at the same time, when you're talking about a kitchen that is changing and eventually, you know, certain kind of information is like, look, I don't need to have a refrigerator that talks back to me, but a flat screen embedded in the door right now is considered, you know, an optional. It'll happen. It'll just be your doorbell. Yes. It'll be, you know, certain kind of things you cannot run
well,
away.
Well, I'm waiting for my refrigerator to supply me with a shopping list.
That is something that, you know, I'm sure that it's working. Is there, do you see, what is the hardest exercise for you to bring people like, to give you an example, when I try to talk to my wife about these ideas that I have or a certain kind of technology, the first initial response is interested because of the novelty. Mm-hmm. And then the moment that I mention blockchain, or AR, I need to try to avoid certain words because all of a sudden they feel alienating. And I'm sure, I mean, in the green room, you told me that it happens the same thing to your wife. So there has to be, I think that the kitchen is a fantastic place in the house where you can demystify a little bit, bring it back to
I just think you have to make it fun and entertaining and exciting. I agree. There are certain words that when you use, they feel overwhelming. They feel inaccessible. And so, you know, we don't say, come to Sue's Tech Kitchen and learn how to code and blockchain and AI. No, we say, you know, come enjoy a 3D printed s'more.
Yeah.
You know, and come engage in all of these things. And that gets people in the door. And then once they're in the door, you can educate them while you're entertaining them at the same time. A big thing that's at the ethos of Sue's Tech Kitchen, though, is that we purposely set these up in smaller cities. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, I have a dream to be in the center of Manhattan and LA and Chicago. But for me, the big thing is that there are millions of people in this country who don't even have basic Wi-Fi access. Like
Agreed.
This conversation we're having right now, they wouldn't even be sitting on the sofa because they can't even dream of a world of augmented reality and refrigerators that recognize devices because they don't even have basic Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And, I think it's very important that what we do is we go into these areas that we get people caught up and make sure that they're able to participate in the economy.
It's almost like a history book in reverse.
That's right.
You're going there to show them what the futures look like as opposed to
and
telling the
story. And give them
the
opportunity to participate in it. You know, if a child, we recently were just in Jackson, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. You know, if a child who isn't going to be learning about these things in school comes into Sue's Tech Kitchen sees that,
you know,
all of a sudden it implants in the back of their mind that that is a possibility for them.
Well, that to me is actually a fantastic point about this kind of technology. The fact that the retention from kids and adults to a degree is higher if compared to, let's say, traditional publishing magazine or books are still, you have to dive in, you need to spend time. But when it's about either watching a passive commercial on TV or spending the same 30 seconds in an immersive field, there is that add-on. There is that way. So what is your experience in that in terms of like people being engaged by this technology? And do you see, sorry, I keep on bringing it to the kitchen. I want to hear where, from you, your vision. What do you see happening?
Well,
crystal ball here.
Crystal ball. So, right, you want to know about 2030. So, I like to say that, well, because it's true, that we always overestimate the near term and underestimate the long term. So there's no question that we are on the cusp of an evolutionary change that started with the smartphone, right, because it's changed the relationship of parents and children. And nothing is more fundamental to evolution than that relationship. Yet, we are infinitely available to our loved ones, but we are far less present when we're together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the technology that we're working with has to be seen in that context, because as much as we create it and we control it, it also is changing us in ways that we don't really know, right? That's the technology is defined as much by the unintended consequences as it is by what it does. So, jumping over the struggles that we're going to have with this technology over the next 10 or 15 years as it becomes prevalent. You know, the idea that the camera or the digital glasses that you would wear that have computer vision, and they see things, right? And the computer knows what to do with them. And they will be tied to your apps.
Right.
Right? So, you know, Facebook will have augmented reality. Twitter will have augmented reality. And so you'll use those apps as your filters so that you're not constantly assaulted by information. So I said a few minutes ago, we were talking about the world being painted with data, right? Every person, every place, everything is going to have an invisible data layer. But you don't want to see those. You want to know the data is there,
accessible.
But you may not want it, right? You know that there's my phone can identify a car and tell me everything about it, but you wouldn't want to walk down the street seeing the data from every car. You know, there's a Netflix show called Anon, and the guy is walking around like the Terminator with data running past his eyes, and it's a nightmare.
It's a
nightmare, right? It's a nightmare vision.
It's like the classic romantic comedies where like they can hear everything that everyone's thinking, what the women are thinking,
right.
And they're like, no, I don't want to hear
exactly.
That.
Exactly. That is the visual equivalent of too much information. So I will say about augmented reality also that we're very hung up on the optical element and of these illusions that are going to float in front of us, but sound actually may be the most important part of it, right? Because my favorite example is I go to a conference and I'll turn on facial recognition. Huge privacy issues around facial recognition. So ultimately, it may never happen for consumers, and that may be a good thing. But I'll use it as an example of how sound can work with augmented reality. I go to a conference, okay, and I've got 20,000 followers on LinkedIn. So most everybody at a tech conference is going to be connected to me in some way. And you know, I know, you know, a couple of dozen of them. So what augmented reality could do is, for example, computer vision could see that it's Gabrielle, but rather than pulling up his LinkedIn profile and throwing it in my field of view where I'd have to read it, you know, Alexa will whisper to me, you know, maybe a little light or a glow, so that I know that Alexa is talking about you, will whisper your name to me. So that's an example of sound working in with computer vision, working together rather than it throwing up a lot of different text and images into my field of view when I don't really want them or expect them or have time for them. Because it would be pretty terrible if I were sitting here talking to Randy and I was reading my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
That would be very weird, first of all.
Eventually, I think that, you know, women have that BS detector where if you're talking to them, but your eyes are not in the talk, like.
Yes, exactly, they know.
They'll burn you right away.
So they probably will be able to tell that you're reading Twitter.
Yeah, they'll probably look at you.
You'll get that glazed look like your eyes are focused 2 inches away,
At the same time, this is what gets me excited. The same mechanism can be your grandmother telling you a recipe.
Well, that's true, but let's go into the kitchen.
And bring you back. So it's kind of like using technology to root you even more and to find the next core and to keep it alive.
So let's go into the kitchen. We talk about the Internet of Things and refrigerators and other appliances talking to you. Augmented reality is the operating system for the kitchen, right? You'll walk into the kitchen wearing your AR glasses. Again, it'll look totally normal like it does now, except, you know, there's, a light on next to the coffee maker, and you may reach out and pinch that light to turn on your coffee maker. You may be going to the store, and so you'll double tap your refrigerator, and a virtual shopping list will show up in your hand, right? Which you can then, you know, fold up and get again later in the grocery store.
To your wife.
You won't have to do that. You won't have to do that. You'll have content that you'll carry with you, but you won't have to whip out your phone to access it. You'll grab it out of thin air, you'll double tap, you'll speak an instruction, and up that content will pop. But again, we're talking about a world 15 years from now. A lot of the things I'm talking about haven't been invented, or they are, you know, the subjects of research at universities.
But we all read comic books when we were kids at some point or another, and I would say most of those things, with the exception of the gigantic bases, the space station, like almost everything happened aside from
I want to know where my flying car is. I've always wanted my flying car.
He's getting there.
Given the way people drive in New York, though, flying cars may not be the best idea I've ever heard.
Do you see that connection made in the kitchen? Like the idea that companies can actually work towards a common goal by sharing the information and creating an ecosystem where it's not just you building your 3D food printer necessarily disconnected from the people that are working on the fridge.
Absolutely, because I think food is one of the most inherently social things that we have. We connect. Also, we're increasingly living in a world where even under the same roof, people have different eating habits. Maybe people have allergies. There are all sorts of different things that we're dealing with. And when technology can help us to navigate can help us to navigate, okay, this has these ingredients, or here's alternate ways to make these things, or let's make this batch that's not contaminated for this person. I think, you know, first of all, that's going to reduce a lot of stress that people have of hosting and having people over, and will keep a lot of people safer in the kitchen too. So I think there are, you know, countless ways that technology can improve safety and sociability.
Describe the most exciting animal that you have in the kitchen, like that piece of appliance or that piece of tech that you're really paying attention, not just because of fun. I mean, they can be two, the most fun one and the one that you think is going to kind of like change the game.
Interesting. Okay, well, the fun one is definitely our pancake robot is fun because you can, the robot can make a pancake in any shape. It can do things that are much more intricate than the human hand can.
So
you want a full replica Eiffel Tower
made out
of pancake.
So is it like an nozzle that sprays, that delivers the food on the
exactly.
grill?
Exactly. All you have to do is just put the pancake batter in and then the robot does everything else.
That's cool.
And it even realizes, okay, if I, you know, shade it differently, it'll have, you know, different degrees of brown, so it puts
like
the batter in different.
Yeah,
so now what we know is going to be a sharper image in 2025.
That's right, exactly. So you can have a pancake make the Mona Lisa for you, you know? So that's fun. I don't know how practical that is. It's fun. But I do think that some of the 3D printing around food is going to be pretty amazing, because we're now looking at 3D printers that can cook, you know, print kind of a meat even.
Mm-hmm.
And then cook it and do everything. So, it really is starting to, you know, become a sous vide, an oven, a prep all in one, which, you know, when I think about restaurants and hotels and people who want to make high quality food in mass, suddenly that becomes a real game changer.
You know, it's funny because, you know, the first time that I started talking to this company that does 3D food printers, it's actually sugar based. They are in Germany. And they're trying to come to New York. So I was talking to my wife about, look at them. And my wife was like, what's the point? My point is that I have left my mom across the ocean. She still lives in Florence. And if
you could make her dinner by programming, I can send
her an edible postcard or a love letter from my machine to hers. She wakes up in the morning and there's a cookie signed by my daughter. Like, yes, it is playful, but there is that sense of community. One of the things that excites me of this evolution is that, to a degree, there is the opportunity to keep close to the heritage where we come from, because we have tools to keep it alive in a way that, look, until 10 years ago, we only had cookbooks to keep alive grandma's ideas. Like right now, we're getting to a point where this digital environment can truly help you preserve history, record events. Like, it's turning into a fantastic opportunity to become knowledgeable, to have that knowledge. As you're saying, you know, you never get old. Like, whatever question you have, you pull out your device and that answer is there. To me, it's about elevating, really, like, the knowing within yourself that you have access to that technology already makes you a better person. Assuming that you're going to reach out for your device and dive into that.
I agree.
Well, I think it's interesting because what we're really talking about is a theme that, you know, the killer apps for augmented and ultimately virtual reality are going to be social.
Yeah.
Right? Because people are the killer app. Why do I check my phone 200 times a day? It's not because I'm checking stock quotes. It's because it connects me to other people.
Yeah.
So that's not going to change as we move across platforms or as we become more tech savvy or have better devices. That's not going to change. And I do agree with the premise that the kitchen is the social place of the house, right? The kitchen is where we are together. Mm-hmm. And at some point we, you know, put down our devices and we share, you know, in the fundamental things of life, you know, eating, family, those relationships. So, you know, the dinner table is where people really are human and stripped of those technologies. So at the same time that room is becoming more high tech, that basic activity will stay the same.
I mean, think about the day that you'll be able to have an hologram of your mother having dinner with you at the same table, but she'll be on the other side.
Well,
of the
how
world.
About your mother in Italy? We put a couple of 3D cameras in the kitchen. We put a couple of 3D cameras in your kitchen. You all wear the HoloLens. Won't interfere with your ability to see the real world and see your food. But Grandma will be sitting at the table with you.
Yeah.
And she'll see you and you'll see her and you'll have a conversation with her. Okay, she may look like she's been through a Star Trek transporter accident, but she will be there.
I'm like envisioning the conversation now of explaining HoloLens to my 92-year-old.
I know.
And I'm like, maybe I'll just call her.
Well, I think it's one of those things. You just have to put it on her head.
Yeah. Right.
If you explain it a lot, then it's never going to happen.
Yeah. You just put it on her head and she probably won't. You know, the funny thing is that I also notice a lot of resistance just because of the lingo and just because it still feels that it's slightly elitarian. Like, people that are really passionate about these things are able to talk on behalf of these things, but it's not as common.
Yeah.
So, like, even me explaining it to my daughter this morning what I was coming here to do and what I discussed. She's 12. She gets it. But there is that opportunity to really make the jump and
yes.
not just making it become part of our normality, but really creating like the middle ground where
the usability is going to be so important, because I don't know about you guys. I mean, right now in my house, and I consider myself a pretty tech savvy person. I can barely even turn on television in my house because there's 14 remotes. We have an espresso maker that, you know, when we moved in, they kept being like the espresso maker. I've lived in the house a year. I haven't turned it on once because it's so complicated. I just press the Keurig. Like,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
So I feel like the tech is too smart that it's not even usable.
Where do you think you find the balance in this growth?
I mean,
making sure that you don't leave anybody behind and you do not do things that are unnecessary.
I think we can't just keep making tech for the sake of, like, look how exciting this tech is and how smart and how cool it is.
That's almost like every artist. You fall in love with your own song. You fall in love with your own poem. You know
what
I mean? So the engineer falls in love with his own creation, sometimes losing the perspective.
Yes.
But, you know, technology works through iteration,
yep.
right? You don't jump, you know, you don't do a moonshot where if it misses, everybody gets killed, right? You go, you know, 100 miles at a time,
right.
And then
you need a Google Glass to then have like a Pokemon Go.
Right, exactly. I mean, a great example is how the iPod became the iPhone.
Right.
Yes. Yep.
Right, so they didn't come out with an iPhone in 2002. You know, that first there was an iPod, and we got used to those, and we got used to using them, and we got used to what they can do, and then the ideas got extended. And I think that's what's happened to cars. People are arguing now. I saw an article this morning that says cars are complicated to the point of being unsafe.
I
think that's true, by the way. I have a new car, and I swear to God, I've gotten in like almost 5 accidents just trying to figure out how the radio works.
Too many boxes.
Yeah.
Too many boxes.
I kept my previous car for 20 years, by the way, for that reason.
Well,
I didn't want to learn a new car.
That's why people do not steal cars that have stick shift. Because they're, you know, too complicated.
That's right.
And the same with my wife. Like the other day, you know, we are lucky enough that we have a basement with a little, you know, running machine and a bench where to do some exercise. So she's like, hey, where did you put my iPod? I have my music on it. Because, you know, the old iPod, the last gen, which I think it was Gen 5, was a really big hard drive where a lot of music could keep. And I'm like, it's probably in a cabinet somewhere, but why don't you use your phone? And she's like, well, no, because I keep my music on the iPod. I'm like, but it's the same. And there are moments like this that I'm sure are bound to happen in any family and in any place of work or business or house. There is that trying to keep up with the business, trying to really decide what's worth, what's not, your attention, your money, your use, ultimately. Do I need to use this or not?
Do you want, one of the things that's been so interesting about Sue's Tech Kitchen, because we talk all the time as parents about like, oh, kids these days, they just sit on the sofa, they're on their phone, they're this, they're that. I have to say that in Sue's Tech Kitchen, it is the adults that are far worse behaved. The kids come in and they're like, wow, I want to engage with this and this. And then like mom and dad are over in the corner on their phone, totally disengaged. And we kind of go over to them and we're like, hey, maybe get involved. So
if anything, you're out with your kids.
That's
Jesus,
right.
Like, why don't you spend some time with them?
Exactly.
Now that you made the effort of bringing them out, it would be nice.
So it's funny that usually that conversation revolves around like, how do we keep our kids out of tech? And but from what I've seen, it's the parents that kind of set the example.
What about the people that come to listen to you, Charlie, or, you know, let's say, let's call them your fans. What is the demographic? Is the youngsters growing up and really wanting to change the world, or more people like me that are interested and trying to?
If you ask me, I can only go by what I see on social media. Because you have to understand, if you're a writer, you're alone most of the time.
Yeah.
Right? I have no idea who's reading my column. I have no idea what people think of me. I am completely isolated. When I put an article out there, you know, I get a bunch of Twitter interaction or LinkedIn interaction with it. But, I really don't know. And then I go to these conferences and it's just, the response is overwhelming. I'm like, oh my God, all these people know me. And I had no idea. So I went to Augmented World Expo. Doesn't that sound like an exciting place to be? I was at Augmented World.
I was going to go to Hawaii, but now like that's yeah, yeah, right, like,
exactly.
Where I want to go.
Right. First of all, it is one of the best conferences in the country. And I've been to South by Southwest. I go to CES every year, but Augmented World Expo is like my people. My tribe, right? So I said to my wife while I was there, I said, this is the best conference I've ever been to. There are 5,000, I'm famous to 5,000 people, and they're all here. So, you know, it's people in tech. I mean, I try and make my writing accessible to people. I'm not an engineer, right? A lot of times I'm interviewing engineers. I'm like, help me understand this so that I can explain it to other people. But in terms of the people who are really following me, who are, you know, reading the book, I mean, my book is, it's a textbook in 175 schools. So, I mean, this is not like normal beach reading.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a very accessible book and, might I add, incredibly entertaining. But I think the people who are attracted to the subject.
You have to have the will. Yeah.
You have to be interested in the subject. So, you know, I mean, really, the book is for anybody, but in terms of people who really give a damn and who interact with me on Twitter and act as an evangelist for my work or forward it to somebody else or, you know, repost it on, different social media platforms. I mean, these are people who are honestly, Gabriel, like you and me.
Yeah.
You know, these are people in there who are in tech in some way, whether they're marketing people who are, you know, very analog, like I am, or whether they're, you know, senior engineers, because the stuff needs to get written down.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to get written down and we need to talk about
stories
it.
Stories need to be told. Like
yeah,
the old
stories
times,
need to be
know,
told.
The
and
world
so,
still has to move from
so
year to year.
So partly I tell those stories to people who don't know anything about the technology, but I also spend a lot of time talking to people who are developing the technology. And part of my role is just sort of being a dumb guy walking in, you know, saying, well, what about this? And how are we going to do that? And have we thought about this? And you don't have to be an engineer to do that.
Right.
You just have to, you know, it's a feat of imagination. So you pour in enough data. And you think about it enough, and that computer, which is my brain, free associates its way into some kind of knowledge.
What do you think we could do at Sue's Techgen? Could we print like a QR code onto pasta or something that the place that brings something up? Like, what would you do?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the place it goes is, you know, you use augmented reality becomes a kind of cookbook. Right, where you see, you know, in the same way that Lego has augmented reality instructions that you access using your smartphone, the camera in your smartphone.
I like
so
it.
It'll kind of be built in. So, you know, maybe you'll see a picture in a cookbook and the picture is the trigger, which activates the augmented reality. And now that cake is floating out here in front of you. Maybe you can explode it and see the different layers and press on those layers and the instructions show up. So we could do that today in your kitchen using, just a cell phone or a pad.
That's awesome.
That's really interesting because, you know, when I was, filming and, you know, I ended up in the world of food TV by mistake, just by embracing YouTube and pouring content I was really trying to save my family recipes because all of a sudden I moved from Italy to the U.S., I got my wife pregnant on the first week that I arrived, go Italians, and then I really started writing down my family recipes because I wanted to make sure that I passed it on. All of a sudden, I was the only one with that knowledge here. I didn't have my mom, I didn't have my grandmother, so I ended up becoming that by mistake. As the things move forward, though, that is exactly the change that I hope to happen. I would love to see the community building and the interaction where certain kind of knowledge can be accessible in a snap and the help that you have from your either smart appliance or your Wi-Fi system or whatever sensor. And trust me, like when I think about this, I don't think like 50 years from now, the completely autonomous kitchen. I want people to be in the kitchen, but I want that knowledge not to be lost, and ultimately these devices to be useful to you and not you becoming dependable from it. So when I hear, you know, that one day you'll be able to have a QR code and being able to pull up a recipe, I like the idea of connecting directly, which is something that TV doesn't offer, because TV is driven by commercial space and advertising space that is sold. My episodes on TV were 23 minutes. They had to have four recipes. Who is able to even think in 23 minutes about four different recipes? And that to me is the lack of food TV. The fact that we vomit out content and then we ask you, come and visit the website so there's more impression, more advertising sold. Follow us on social media. There has to be, especially in a place like the kitchen.
But in augmented reality, all that gets deconstructed.
Exactly.
Right, it gets totally deconstructed. You don't watch a linear 22-minute video. You see the video in 3D and you say, let me grab that recipe. And then you grab the ingredients and then you grab, and maybe you take those ingredients and you put them into your shopping list. So all these things are happening intuitively in front of you and around you. So there'd be no need to replay the video on YouTube. Find the mark where you start talking about that recipe that I remembered hearing about and writing down the ingredients. And, you know, so all of that is very analog way of looking at how to use the content produce.
That opened a whole other debate that people say TV is dead. I do not believe that.
No,
TV's
don't
dead.
Ever bet against video.
TV will always be there forever.
43% of the time spent with smartphones is spent watching video.
Exactly. So, you know, as
not necessarily by us, but that's what our kids are doing.
The kind of video is probably not something we want to talk about on this show. But
well, again, kids are looking at something differently.
I've already been
following the theme of his wife. You're going to be in trouble when you get home, buddy. That's all I can say.
My last binge watch was like Luke Cage, which is
one thing I think about a lot, though, is, you know, as all of this is developing, and you know, now you don't even have to leave your house. You can, you know, order anything on Seamless. You can get your groceries.
I know.
And
the thing is that food is so expensive in New York.
Yes.
Seamless, especially if you're cooking for yourself, is really not that more expensive.
Exactly. No. So that's why I think it's also going to really change the way that restaurants create and our experience around restaurants. And that's why, you know, especially with Sue's Tech Kitchen, everything we do, it has to be an experience. It has to be theater, because really, there's really no reason to leave your house anymore for food.
I know. Well, if anything, whoever's got the best kitchen will probably have guests coming
in. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I think you're going to be okay in New York, because nobody entertains in their home.
Yeah.
So when you get together with people, the restaurants of New York are our living room.
Or we have enough room in their homes for all these smart appliances.
Right.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe that 40 minutes already came and went. I would love to keep you here for a whole day, but I will definitely do more episodes and we'll do more things together.
Please.
To thank you so much, but I also want to allow you to just drop your final 2 cents on what's important to you, where you see the change, and what's in the future for you. Just bring some water to your well, so to speak. Does it work when you translate it to English?
Sort of. Well, it's an interesting turn of phrase, but I do understand what you mean. Well, first of all, let me plug my book.
Yes,
my book
is
called Charlie Fink's Metaverse, an AR-enabled guide to VR and AR. And what I mean by AR-enabled is you download our free app onto your cell phone and you point it at the cover and the author pops up and tells you about the book. You open the book and every chapter has an AR scene that is associated with it. So it's kind of like a New Yorker cartoon, except there are 30 of them. And then in the back of the book, there's augmented reality art. And it's awesome. So it's available Barnes & Noble and, of course, on Amazon, either paper or Kindle.
You can enroll in one of those 135 schools that carry it. So
there you go. Yeah. Well, of course, then you probably end up paying retail for it as a textbook while the school harvests the margin.
Yeah.
So I'm also writing another book, which will be out in March of 2019, that is specific to augmented reality and drills down a little more deeply. You asked me in the green room, is my book out of date, right? Because I started writing it almost a year ago. And I really thought the 6 months after the book was out. In fact, when you open the flyleaf, there's a giant black page that says, notice, this book is out of date. And people ask me, you know, because of that, well, is it out of date? And the answer is, you know, actually not really. But it is very incomplete. So it's sort of like the story up to there, and then you have to keep telling it. The other thing, of course, is that there's so much I didn't know. It's, I mean, this is a very, very big subject that touches a lot of different kinds of computer science. So there's a lot to understand. There's a lot of activity, both in the public sector and in the private sector, much of which, of course, is concealed, right? I can't tell you really what's going on in Apple Labs or some of the other places that are developing this technology. But it's progressing rapidly, and it's an exciting time to be talking about it. I mean, it's, what makes a great story is we don't know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, and we're good, you know. It's a good spectacle. It's a good show to be part of. And what about Sue?
Well, we're touring. Sue's Tech Kitchen is touring 6 different cities this summer. So
and how do they get tickets?
You can go to suestechkitchen.com. Okay. We're going to be in Austin, Tacoma, Atlanta, Fort Lauderdale, Chicago, a ton of cities this summer and beyond. Me personally, I actually just put out a new book also called Pick 3, which is about being work-life lopsided instead of work-life balanced, which I think a lot of us relate to that.
I've always been work-life lopsided.
So much so that you had to write a book about
it. That's exactly right. So I'm just really excited about finding new ways to connect with entrepreneurs and families, especially families that you know aren't located in big cities with a lot of resources, and how to get them so they can participate in this exciting economy too.
Wonderful. I am extremely grateful of the time that you gave me. Thank you so much for coming here on Future Bites. From our studios on Penn Plaza, we say goodbye, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much
again,
Randy.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Cheers.